Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Not Penn and Pendergast, not today. Not in this dojo.
John it's Harris Seth is coming and taking Harris. Over.
That's right.
Taking over the show. I'm actually...
I'm John Kreese. Taking over Cobra Kai again.
I always enjoy working with you, John, but especially there's... you know, after a game like the one we had there, I'm going to be careful not to do this to you. Okay. I love your eye for the technical side of things, but I'm not going to ask you how to fix that offense or what's wrong with it because, I mean, well, we're going to talk about various aspects of it, but to fix it in the sum total, in the aggregate, it's been frustrating for me all year long because there's just so many things wrong that it's a grab bag of like, okay, yeah, they could have done this a lot better. They should be doing this a lot better. Or no, this isn't where it needs to be. The sum total of it all is that it's a miserable discussion whenever you have it. It's hard to, if you want to fixate on one little thing, it's really, really hard.
Yeah, I mean, I think what ends up happening, I've thought about this for years, and you've been around coaches. I've come from a coaching family. I coached myself, and there are times when you can't get what you think should work. And I think Kansas City was a great example of that. The Kansas City game was a great example of that. And there were a couple of times when Mark threw it down to me, and I was kind of perplexed. We were running wide receiver screens to the way that we were. I was like, there comes a point where it's not working. But you keep looking at it going, it's got to work. Damn it, it's got to work. Look, there's two guys out there. One guy's all the way to the hash. The other guy is out playing a rolled-up corner. We got two receivers out there. We should be able to block the corner and throw it to our best receiver, and then he can run. Yeah. And it doesn't work. And you, like, you know what I mean? It's like one of those things where you just, it's got to work.
It's drawn up the right way.
Yes.
And you get to the end of the season, and this is the problem. It's that a lot of the stuff that keeps showing up is stuff that, in theory or ideally, you've got worked out during training camp. Mm-hmm. Blocking human beings. It's kind of a big deal. No matter how much, as much as the game has changed, blocking still really, really matters. The actual ability to block people and especially to know who you're blocking. The first step is Nick Sirianni had said in his opening press conference is knowing what to do. And people laughed at him and thought, well, that's a plainly obvious statement. Not as obvious as you might hope. Because, man, there's too many times on those screens where, and I don't care if it's offensive linemen, I don't care if it's wide receivers, whomever it might be, it's like they're waiting to process who and where they're supposed to block after the catch is made. And it's almost like a surprise to them. You know, Dalton Schultz, there's so many times out there on screens or what have you, where I'm like, oh, it looks like it's like he just found out, like he got a letter in the mail that, hey, you're supposed to figure out who to block on this play and try to, you know, maybe anticipate where he's going to be. Don't run to exactly where he is right that moment because the defensive players tend to move. It's so maddeningly incompetent at times that I don't know what to do with it.
This is the frustrating aspect to me. And this is the frustrating aspect to coaches. And I said, it's got to work. Look at it. It's got to work. Here's the next line. Well, damn it. It worked perfectly last year. And here's a great example of that. Against Kansas City, there was, and I'm trying to remember, I think we were, for me, it was right to left. On the TV screen, it was left to right.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was in the second quarter, I think. We ran the same. We got the same look from Kansas City that we got from Cleveland in the playoff game. Mm-hmm. Same exact look. You're going to run kind of a mini tunnel screen. Laramie kicks out the corner, and Nico goes behind him and walks in the end zone. It worked against Cleveland with the exact same defensive look, the exact same Texans personnel, and Nico got tackled for a 2-yard loss.
Yeah.
So it's and that's the frustrating aspect. Like, you see something defensively and you're like, "Oh, I have an answer for that. I got an answer." And the answer was good. Cleveland playoff game. Good. And then all of a sudden, the other day, they get a 2-yard loss and you're like, "God dang it." But
this is where
that's to me where it gets frustrating when you're as a coach, because you're like, "Well, I don't understand. The timing seemed to be good. Everything seemed to be okay, but one block doesn't get made that got made in the playoff game. That got sprung for a touchdown. This should have gotten sprung for a touchdown." And yeah. I think that's where it's frustrating, because now you're at, all right, well, what do we do? Well, a little bit later in the game, second down, after you get the fourth down stop against the Chiefs, you throw that screen out to Nico. And X has got McDuffie blocked like where you'd want it. But Nico, when he catches the ball, his momentum kind of takes him outside. It takes him right into McDuffie. Like, if Nico can catch it and get inside, and you can see CJ after the play, like, bro, inside. So it just feels like those little things as a coach, you're like, dang it. What? And you get so frustrated that all of a sudden you start grab bagging at plays, because you're like, well, the screens aren't working like I thought they were.
Yeah.
That was my answer to this. So now I got to do something I don't want to do as my answer to this, and I don't know if that's a good answer. And then all of a sudden it can end up being the hodgepodge you talk about.
You know, the one thing, too, is that one screen to Nico is that, McDuffie is kind of starting to bail out at the snap.
Yeah.
And this is when you talk about, okay, things that worked last year and things they've been trying to do all this year long. When he's in the middle of backpedaling as the ball is snapped, as soon as he sees the blocker come at him, like, he's on it like a missile.
Yeah.
You know, and the tendencies are there. The tough thing about the screen game, and where I kind of look at it as a barometer for how an offensive coordinator is getting the simple things done and, like, running things pristinely, is that there's so many tendencies with a screen by formation,
yeah.
by... Yep. offensive line behavior, by wide receiver alignment and stances and everything. The smart defenses just start to figure it out. And because there's a lot of tells. So you got to really, really be good at it. The more you run them, like, the better you have to get at it, because smart defenses and smart cornerbacks are going to figure it out. And that's where I think it's just too easy for those guys to almost bait you into the screen at this
yeah,
point.
Absolutely.
They know that if I'm showing soft, yeah.
And McDuffie's a stud. I mean,
yeah.
I've loved that dude for a long time. And so it was like, you want to get the ball to Nico. Well, every time Nico lined up, McDuffie was somewhere around him. So now you're throwing it to, your best receiver, but you're throwing it against one of the best and smartest corners in the league. Now, you and I were just talking about the difference in a play that worked last year versus a play that worked this year. CJ Stroud was after the game about the difference between his rookie season last year and this year. If this is the right answer, go ahead, Colin.
I think I've tried to approach the game the same way I did, and even, I think I'm seeing it better than I ever have, just a little banged up, so not really making plays, and that's a terrible excuse, but I mean, really just not making plays. That's really the difference between last year and this year for me, is just not making enough plays. So, there's times where, the plays are to be made and there's guys open and I got to find a way to, make the play work, make somebody miss or do something just that I'm capable of doing, and winning us a football game, that's really, up to me to lead our team in those times where guys are open and, ultimately it's just me making plays. That's really how I look at the difference between this year and last year, which, can be fixed.
Yeah, and I think he's right. Things can be fixed. But he said something in there that I thought was hugely important. Now, he said it, and then he immediately kind of caught himself when he said it. Ask the question again, the difference between his rookie season performance and this season. He says, you tell me. I know I've tried to approach the game the same way I did. And I think I'm seeing it better than I ever have. Just a little banged up. Just a little banged up to not really making plays. That's a terrible excuse. That's when he caught himself. But he admitted, really, you know, banged up. Yeah. And I think we all, as fans, followers, analysts, people that talk about the game, got people with eyeballs, we can see he's banged up and that he's been banged up. And now he's admitting it. And I think for a player to admit it, especially a guy like that, that is as tough as it gets, that's saying, hey, look, man, yeah, I'm beat up a little bit. And like I said, the other day, he was wearing something on his wrist. I don't know if that, you know, is what it was. I don't remember him ever wearing that. But either way, you can just tell it was off the other day. Then he said that after the game. So, Seth, I'll ask you this. Tennessee game. We don't know where we're playing, Saturday or Sunday. Don't know. Yeah. Either. Don't know that yet. My guess is it's Sunday at noon because the game, really, the Texans are the 4 seed. Titans aren't going anywhere. There's really not a whole lot of drama there. To me, that's a game in which you don't play C.J. Stroud. And you let him get rehabbed and get ready for the Saturday playoff game, which I'm assuming is coming on January 11th. That's what I'm saying. What are your thoughts about C.J. against the Tennessee Titans on the 5th?
This is what I've been saying all year long, that if we got into some kind of situation where he didn't have to play, you know, or there were meaningless games at the end of the year, I felt like, man, but the offense needed those games versus the Chiefs and the Ravens because they got to figure some things out. And if you're going to make a push, you gotta go out and do something against those teams. So that's obviously falling apart. I am really torn because I think emotionally, just in terms of everything surrounding this team right now, I don't know what it's like in the locker room. I don't know how the coaches feel about everything. There's a part of me that says, man, you got to go out and have some success. You got to have a taste of success. You got to go out and play some good offense or something. And if it were just a bad football team, a typical bad football team, I'd be like, all right, yeah, just go out and just even play a half versus the Titans. The problem is the Titans are a bad football team that owned you the last time you played them.
Yep.
And I don't know, this isn't the team that you're necessarily going to go out and go get right against. So I'm going to go back towards whatever's ailing CJ physically and mentally, perhaps just whether it's fatigue or in a combination of those two things. You go back to last year. Hey, CJ got concussed in that Jets game, and it wasn't going well in that Jets game before he got concussed. Right. He had to miss 2 games, and yet there might have been a part of that that for a rookie maybe kind of let him refresh a little bit, and he came back and they looked different when he came back. I think CJ needs to be as healthy as possible going into the playoffs, so I'm leaning towards just go ahead and resting key people in that game, and come what may, okay, whether you win or lose versus the Titans, I don't think it really changes your perception about like where the football team is right now. So just go ahead and get your key players healthy.
Yeah, you basically encapsulated what I've been thinking. And that was my exact thought, was he got the concussion against the Jets. And I remember him saying at some point, maybe I thought this and he said it, maybe he didn't say it, but I felt like there were some other things that were ailing him.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe it's just bumps and bruises that he just had a chance to get over in missing the 2 games after the concussion. Now, this won't be 2 full weeks, but he's obviously not coming off of a concussion either. But that, I don't know, maybe he is. But he did leave the game, excuse me, in the second quarter, and then did come right back in. And, I mean, the dude is tough as hell. And so that's what I worry about. Like, sometimes you have to protect a guy from himself, especially at the quarterback position. You have to protect him from himself. And I remember when Deshaun, back in the COVID season of 2020, I remember when we were playing Chicago and we're getting the bejesus beat out of us, and yet they can't slow him down. Like, he's going back in the game. Like, he had gotten hit one time by Khalil Mack, I think, and everybody's like, you know, he's done. Like, get him out. Like, Deshaun won't come out. He wouldn't come out of the game. Yeah. You have to protect him from himself. And so that's why one of the thoughts I've had is just keep him out of this game. If you even let him suit up, he's going to want to get in that thing, especially if things aren't going great. The other thought is you're playing Devondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons. I don't know if I love that. And wouldn't those guys love to deliver a hit at some point.
Devondre, I don't need 370-pound Devondre Sweat landing on C.J. Stroud.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Hey, if Devondre Sweat gets fined $9,000 in a meaningless game at the end of the year, he's not too worried about that. It could completely sabotage and tank any chances the Texans have in the postseason.
Right.
That you actually invoking Devondre Sweat's name and knowing that, okay, I'm with you. I like the way Kendrick Green plays, and I think he's way better on a down by down basis. The problem is he's tiny, and they're going up against a guy like Devondre Sweat. There's going to be a play or two in that game where he kind of just swats Kendrick Green aside,
yeah,
and possibly lands on C.J. Stroud. I don't need it.
Yeah, I don't need it either. To your point, you and I have talked about this. I think Kendrick has probably played a little better than people expected when he went in Kansas City. I just remember Mark throwing it down to me, and I'm literally staring out to the field, and I see Chris Jones standing basically across from Kendrick Green in a break of the game, and I'm like, oh God, no. And then the very next play is a run play, and yeah. Kendrick lifts him up off the ground.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, all right, well, what about a pass play? And then the first pass rush, he takes Chris Jones and he just stones him to a point where Chris Jones in that game got so frustrated inside that his pressures all came when he lined up at the right defensive end spot against Laremy Tunsil, left tackle.
Yeah.
That's where his pressures came from, because at that point, Jones is like, well, I'm not going to mess with that dude, and because Kendrick was really holding his own. And I thought Kendrick had a tough play on the twist stunt, the TE that the Ravens ran literally out of the huddle because they were late getting up to the line of scrimmage. But other than that, like I said earlier, PFF had a pretty decent grade on him. So, I don't know, sometimes you find $20 in your pocket, maybe Kendrick's that guy. That would be kind of nice.
I like him because, you know what he reminds me of is, like, he's a beefier version of Mark Stepnoski. Now, he's not nearly as good as Mark Stepnoski.
But that's a great comparison, yeah.
For the young people out there, he was a center that played for the Oilers, the Cowboys, the Titans, he was vastly undersized. I don't know if he weighed more than 255 pounds, but he was like a martial artist. And there were times where, like, playing against him, you'd think, like, oh, I'm destroying this dude. And then all of a sudden, he just kind of wheel his hips and get up underneath you.
Yeah.
And you're like tumbling through the air. Like, what the hell happened? Wait a second. I'm winning. It was like a movie when a villain thinks that he's got the upper hand and all of a sudden he realizes he's about to die. That was me versus Mark Stepnoski. He was a really, really good offensive lineman. So Kendrick Green's not at that level of play, but he kind of, because he's undersized, he plays that same way. He's kind of almost like a violent koala bear on guys at times. He kind of just figures out a way to latch onto him and then won't let go. It's just, but there are times where sometimes he's up against a guy that's got longer arms and more size, and those are the ones that stink, because when he loses really bad. Like,
yeah,
he gets tossed aside it's a beeline to the quarterback.
That's right. And that's exactly, you said it exactly right. Like, he can have some really good reps. There was one against the Jets where I wondered, like, was there some sort of internal penalty they put on himself? Like, he was like a challenge he was going to put forward to see if he could block Javon Kinlaw without his arms.
Yeah.
Like, if he could just, like, throw a shoulder in. Like, I didn't understand it.
Well,
and then Kinlaw ends up getting to the quarterback. But in the two games that he came into the Chiefs game and then started against the Ravens, I'm not going to, you haven't missed much, if anything, with him playing right guard.
And I'm not worried about getting off on tangents today. Screw it. So he was drafted to be a center for the Steelers. And you can see why. Like, everything I see in the way he plays, I look at it and I'm like, man, boy, it seems like I still want to put him at center. He was a disaster for the Steelers, to the point where in his second season, they didn't have him. They had him playing fullback, not as a gadget, but kind of like the beefy dude from the Ravens. Like, nope, he's our fullback now. And that didn't work out because he was so bad at center. But there's a part of me that just looks at it and like, man, there's an athleticism there that I think he can do. He could theoretically make some of these blocks that Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson struggle to make in this scheme. When you need a center to be able to go out and at times reach a two technique or even a three technique, like, I feel like he's athletic enough to do all that, but I don't know if maybe that ship has sailed on him in terms of playing center.
It's funny you say that because I kind of felt the same way. And then we interviewed Kendrick this offseason, Mark and I did, for our media days. We had like, I don't know, it was like 28 to 30 players roll through studio. And Kendrick, we had not had a chance to talk to because obviously he gets claimed a waiver claim. I think it's a waiver claim right before the season started in 2023. Mm-hmm. So then he plays three games, then he gets hurt. So we didn't have a chance to talk to him. But in the offseason, we got a chance to talk to him, and we thoroughly enjoyed it. So I brought up that question about center, guard, you know, what was going on in Pittsburgh. First of all, he was like, he was ticked about how things were going at Pittsburgh. He said, but guard's my natural position. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting next to him, and I went, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, I played at Illinois. He goes, yeah. I played center at Illinois because we didn't have anybody, and Coach Smith asked me to do that, so I did it. He goes, but I'm a guard. In his mind, he's a guard, and he's more comfortable at guard. And I'm thinking the whole time, like, yeah, he's center. He's a center. No, like, he said, I am a guard, and that's, you know, he said, I'll play center. Look, whatever gets me on the field, I'll do, but I am a guard. And I thought, okay, this will be good. And then training camp just didn't have a great training camp. Yeah. And that happens to guys. You see that happen to guys fighting for a job, and then all of a sudden they get down on themselves a little bit, not play well. That kind of carries over to preseason games. It's not going all that well. And you just can't find your footing. And I think for Kendrick, as Coach then said to us the other day, it's all about consistency because he's got the grit. He used that word a couple times. He's got the grit. You know, he's a gritty player. Yeah. It's just a matter of finding some consistency. And, man, if he's found it, then maybe he helps, you know, CJ going forward. But that's a tough go going against Tavondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons in Week 18.
This is where I get frustrated sometimes with where the Texans and when they've broken down on the interior, especially versus some of these the games and stunts and whatnot. Like, as a defensive lineman watching it, I look at the Texans' offensive line, and I'm like, okay, these guys are not good at the physical elements of the game when it comes to run blocking, all of those other things. And there's a lot of factors that go into it, but they're just not good at it. But then you get into the passing game, and they're better pass protectors than they are run blockers. But sometimes when it breaks down in the passing game, it's guys who are forgetting their fundamentals of line play, and they decide to go all hardo and be a tough guy and like, oh, I'm going to go hit the defensive tackle in the ribs while he's engaged with the offensive tackle because I'm a big tough guy. And then they're completely blind to the looper that comes around and right. They get it. So when I'm watching it in my mind, I'm like, oh, you're a tough guy, huh? Oh yeah. Because people love it. Fans love it when they see an offensive lineman go and just blast somebody in the ribs. As a defensive lineman, that doesn't actually usually hurt all that much because it can be embarrassing and degrading because you get knocked down, but you're getting knocked down laterally and, you know, you go to the ground or whatever, but it's not like anything that actually hurts. It's not like when you get a chip block from a running back. But meanwhile, you're exposing yourself to, you're abandoning any other potential responsibilities or like a game on the other side. And that's what drives me insane is that, man, you guys are like, you're trying to play the tough guy, but you're doing it fundamentally wrong, and you guys are not tough. So stop trying to pretend you're tough guys and start being technically sound, because that's when CJ's getting pressure right up the gut. It's just keep your shoulders as square to the line of scrimmage as possible, scan, do all of that. You're not impressing anybody when you're coming in and blasting somebody, especially when they end up getting a sack on the play.
I think the one thing, I don't want to say frustrating. Frustration's not the word. But encouraged is not the word either. But I felt like the other night against the Ravens that the Texans offensive line wasn't the issue, if that makes any sense. Now, weren't able to get anything going in the run game. I mean, that's just I don't even know what to say about that. You got Joe Mixon back there, ends up 70 yards short of 1,000, and I don't even know if you're going to play him against Tennessee. It's a tough defense to run against. Like, I understand that because that Ravens defense is so stout against the run. Like, I can understand. But the protection, I felt like, was not the reason that they were struggling in the passing game, which has not been the case this year. Mm-hmm. It's been them missing the loopers, you know, seeing a sim pressure and then splitting the protection the wrong way where you've got two guys not blocking anybody and they're overloading the other side. and you've split the protection the wrong way. So there have been some things that throughout the year that offensive line was. I mean, the ricochet stunts that I call it a ricochet stunt when you take a guy and it looks like an ET. Sometimes you run with a linebacker, sometimes you run with a tackle. And those stunts have been killing the Texans. Well, finally, the other day against the Ravens, they stopped it a few times.
Yeah.
And it was good. Like, okay, we're making progress. But it's like, you have something wrong or you do something wrong, I can promise you Brian Callahan watched that film and went, oh, we're gonna run trap and wham crunch all day long because that's the way we're going to move the football. Because look at the Ravens. And as soon as you show something, some other team is going to look at it and go, huh, well, they didn't pick this up, so guess what they're going to see? We have seen that same stunt, I think, for the last 5 weeks, maybe six, since we couldn't pick it up. And I'm trying to, I think it was the Packers ran it against us. Mm. They ran against us, had success, and we've seen that same stunt all year. And it's worked against us. And finally, the other night, it didn't work. The Ravens got it shut down. I remember Roquan coming through going, I'm getting the quarterback. And all of a sudden, boom, there's Joe Mixon hitting him. I'm like, they did it. They did it. All right, good. Good. We shut that down. But then
the thing that we were worried about going back to the Chicago game. Yes, yeah, they did it.
And we got it. You know, no time like the present. We got it. We did it. We're good. We're moving forward. And then, you know, the passing game just
a right. Total, yeah, like, you know, like popcorn we said, fart. I mean, that was it's hard all season long to kind of separate, okay, what's CJ's fault? What's the offensive line's fault? Where are the receivers to blame? It was just the easiest game of the year to isolate and say, all right, there's a bunch of bad plays here that were on CJ. That was just, it was either taking sacks or poor throws or whatever it might be. That's the frustrating part of it. But it also does make me, I'm more open to, like, I don't want to excuse it away because it might be injuries, but I'm almost hoping that it's because of injuries. In a weird way, I'm kind of hoping that, yeah, CJ is pretty banged up.
Yeah.
And that's a reason for at least what we saw against Baltimore. And resting him in this game makes all the sense in the world. And maybe you have to do it. Maybe CJ doesn't want to do it and he wouldn't agree to it. So you just go ahead and you say, like, you know what though, CJ? You actually do have an ankle injury, so you're injured this week. And you're on the injury report and you're not playing. Sorry about it. Deal with it.
Okay, so let me ask you this. And I don't know, I don't know. How much do you think missing or not having Tank in that game impacted just everything in the passing game?
Okay, so the
scale one to 10, make it easy. Scale one to 10. One, didn't miss him at all. 10, they were wearing Tank Dell jerseys under their own pads.
I would say, okay, just schematically, on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10, it was like they were really, really missing him. Schematically, I would say that was like maybe a 5. I think as far as, and I don't even want to admit this or acknowledge this, but I think it's... It just feels like, man, I don't know, emotionally or whatever it might be on a short week, it feels like a 7 or an 8.
Yeah.
That perhaps it was something like that, which I don't think this is an old school sentiment. I was actually talking to a 19-year-old college player the other day about the CJ Stroud situation. And this kid said, was like, yeah, well, it's an injury. They happen. You move on, right? And you move on. And sometimes it's somebody you really care about, and it really, really sucks. But there's no time for that. And it's like if you play in the NFL for 15 more years, you're going to see quite a few of your good friends get bad injuries. And it sucks, and it's awful, but it's also something that doesn't have anything to do with what's going on the field moving forward. And you just... You got to be able to create silos. You know, so many of the great athletes are guys that you know that have been going through like horrendous and awful things in their personal life.
Right.
Or a lot of times it's self-inflicted. But,
yes.
You know, yes. How many times were you playing with some guy where his wife found his burner phone, but then he goes out and he balls out the next day?
Like, Earl Thomas wants a piece of that.
You got to be able to separate the emotional things in your personal life or with your friends or anything from what's actually going on the football field.
Right.
And that's, I almost don't know, acknowledge it, that it might be a possibility, because man, it feels like that's something that you just, it's a hard lesson you got to learn and be able to move on from.
Yep.
But there's still some young guys on that team, CJ especially, that sometimes I'm reminded, like, okay, yeah, CJ's mature beyond his years in some ways, but he's also still a young guy. And it's there's there's some growing pain sometimes with things like that.
Yeah, and I can understand that. You know, a guy that you're very close to, and then you mentioned something there, like on off the field. Like, they're close off the field, they're close on the field. Yeah. And I do think that there was some residual, because I know how I felt leaving Arrowhead on Saturday. I felt like somebody had just kicked me right in the nuts, and it's like, yeah. And that lingering pain just in your stomach, just like, it won't go away. What is it? And I know there's a game Wednesday. We're all aware there's a game Wednesday, and we could talk about it, as you said, perfectly. In theory, we got to get over it. We're saying the right things to get over it, but are we? Are we really over it? And I went back to, as a coach, long time ago, where we made the, like the Texans, we got into playoffs. It's the first time in school history. It's awesome, but we still have two more games left on the year, and the two games can kind of impact our seeding and what, you know, kind of the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. So we go to this small town in Florida, and we're beating the absolute bejesus out of this team. We're running it. My running back has 225 yards through three quarters.
Ooh.
I give him a toss play. Just a little weak side toss play to the sideline, and not 3 feet in front of me, they come up and make a tackle, and immediately he grabs his knee.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, all right, John, get up. And all of a sudden, the doctor, I'm like, okay. So I walk over to see him because he's close. The doctor is, what is it? He says his knee, and then he starts doing some tests. Doctor looks at me in the eyes, and he just leaned forward to see what he's saying. He goes, watch his knee. And he goes, you see how I can sublux it like this? Yeah. And he goes, that's an ACL.
Yeah.
And my stomach, he's my best offensive player.
Yeah.
Well, just in that game, we were up 28-7. Well, I mean, I'm a mess. And the next how many ever minutes of the game, they score three touchdowns, make it 28-27, and luckily on the last play of the game, they missed the extra point. And so we won 28-27. But I was a mess the next week, even we was a week away. It took me a long time going through it. Like, I don't have him anymore. I was calling plays for him. How do I adapt to this? How do I, as a coach, like, I'm dealing with the personal side of it. Like, I miss him. I want him here, but I've been calling plays for him. I'm getting him the ball 25 times a game. What do I do with those 25 touches? You know, I think there's probably some carryover, and it may take a little bit to get it out of the system. And I think what ultimately needs to happen is they got to score a touchdown. They got to just show, okay, we just cracked the seal, score a touchdown. We're beyond it. Let's move forward. Because all they've scored since has been a field goal in basically six quarters of play.
Oh, yeah, I know. There's so many like simple things when you step back and look at just how bad they've been offensively and how much worse it's gotten. You know, and it was within, including... And Tank was having his best half of football that he's had all season long versus a good opponent. That part is really difficult. I think down on the third down play where CJ tried to get it to Mechie in the failed goal line drive there.
Hold to go situation.
On the TV copy, Greg Olson said, you know, you'd really love to see some crossers or some mesh or something here to help guys get open, because you're just trying to get guys – they're all manned up and they're trying to beat man coverage. And especially without Tank out there, you've only got one guy out there that you can really trust to beat man coverage, and it's Nico Collins. That part of it, it'd be easy for me to say like, oh, well, Bobby's got to adjust and, you know, do more stuff like Greg Olson's talking about. But that's been one of my questions about this team all year long, is it, they really haven't utilized a lot of mesh and a lot of crossers and a lot of things that can get guys wide open for easy completions for short yardage. They weren't doing it with Tank, and I don't know if that's, you know, that part of it I can't excuse now that Tank is gone, because he wasn't really, it wasn't his fault necessarily, but he wasn't making a big difference in that aspect.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. When you've got Steph, Tank, and Nico on the field, somebody's going to win a one-on-one coverage. Somebody is going to win the one-on-ones in the first game against the Colts. You know, Steph's beating the Colts nickel, you know, for two touchdowns. He only had 33 yards, but he's winning one-on-one. And I think that now that you don't have Diggs or Tank, it goes back to my point that I was making when I was coaching. Like, I could just toss the ball to John And like something was going to happen because he was my best player. I could just toss it to him and I knew it could be the safest play ever. But because he was that good, he was going to. Now I got to work that much harder as a coach to get who's ever back there. Okay, I got to think about how I'm going to get somebody else the ball. And that ends up being a mental challenge for a coach when you've lost a really good offensive player, or in this case with Diggs and Dell, two really good offensive players. And hopefully by the time you get to the Steelers in the playoff game, assuming it's the Steelers, but probably going to be, that you've got that fixed and that you at least have got that in the – I don't know if fixed is the right way of saying it. You have some bullets in the holster at that point. You're not firing blanks, and hopefully that's going to be something that changes going forward. Okay, you've got to talk about Julian in just a second, but there's a rumor that I've heard and both heard and read. I want to bounce it off Seth as it pertains to a former Texans defensive coordinator. That's next on Payne and Pendergast.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
You know who likes giant American flags? Pat McAfee. If you fly a giant American flag anywhere around where McAfee is broadcasting, he will talk about it at least a dozen times.
Oh,
when
really?
When he went to College Station with Game Day, he kept talking about the big American flag that was hanging somewhere in College Station. He kept talking about that thing. And I was like, okay, all right, big American flag. Every time I hear that now, I think of Pat McAfee.
I
don't know if that's great or not.
You know what? No, honestly, that's one of the I love that commercial because it does catch your ear, and I've just noticed that before. It when a car dealership or a restaurant or something like that, it catches your eye.
It does,
and it makes you feel like, oh, all right, I'm gung ho for America too.
Yes,
it's a smart
love
strategy.
America. It's yes,
a very
love
smart
America
strategy.
But I just don't know that I have a flag that big that I can fly anywhere. But apparently,
the whole thing about a flag that big is that you got to be, because it's an American flag, you got to. You got to be careful with it.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
So when it comes to raising it and lowering it and caring, not letting it touch the ground and everything, it's a process. It's not just a one-time thing.
Yeah,
buying an automobile. You got to take care of it after you buy it too.
That's right. I just have the little one that I can display properly. I'm not sure the size of the flag determines how much I love the United States. I think, but I don't know.
It is, well, that's what if I were a business owner, especially, I would lean hard into just like the almost obnoxious and obviously selfish patriotism to where I'd have a big eagle on my wall, I'd have a giant flag, I'd have statues of the forefathers and everything.
I just think of
whichever ones are least likely to get pulled down in a protest or something. Yeah, all of it.
Every time I hear Eagles, I think of John C. Riley and Ricky Bobby, Talladega Nights. And he's like, I imagine my Jesus with Eagles wings. And I always think about that. I always think about that whenever the Eagles brought up. I just think about him saying that. I like to think of my Jesus with Eagles wings. Speaking of patriotism and patriots.
Good old 8-pound, 6-ounce baby Jesus.
That's
as well.
Right. As Colin says, 8-pound, 6-ounce baby Jesus. That was one of the Jesuses that Will Ferrell prayed to in that particular movie. That came up as a clue on Jeopardy the other night. That has become a Harris staple. By the way, John Harrison for Sean Pendergast today. That is a Harris staple, Jeopardy. And it will cause fights in the house.
Oh, yeah?
Fights. Who got it first? Who didn't? There will be times where the next two questions are not heard. Because they're fighting over, my kids are fighting over who got the Jeopardy question right or not. So, yeah, Jeopardy ends up bringing up a good fight. Okay, speaking of Patriots, there is a rumor. I've seen this, and I've read this, and I've heard this. I was listening to, I can't remember who I was listening to. It was a podcast, and they brought this up. But there's a rumor, and this has kind of a two-part question for you, Seth. There's a rumor that the Patriots may jettison Gerard Mayo, a former Patriots linebacker, for another Patriots linebacker to be their new head coach, one Mike Vrabel.
Hmm.
So here's my question, Seth. Number one, Vrabel, question mark, Patriots, question mark. Number two, or B, I can't remember how I said it, A or B, one or two. It's been a long day. Do you give up on a guy after a year?
Right.
I understand what happened here in Houston. It was a little different situation. But Mayo was the guy that was being kind of groomed to be the head coach in New England once Belichick was gone. You give up on that over a year. So Vrabel to the Patriots, question mark. Giving up on Mayo after a year, question mark.
I would be, you know, without having followed them all that closely this year, if your master plan going back several years was that, okay, Gerard Mayo's the guy who's kind of just the next head coach in waiting, or however you thought you might it might play out, I think you got to acknowledge and realize that, okay, you're hiring a guy that's he's young by coaching standards. He's only been in the business for a few years.
Yep.
And that there's probably going to be some growing pains. And by the way, you're going to have a rookie quarterback, this, that, all of the other. It's easy for me, a non-Patriots fan, to say, yeah, they should let it roll one more year with it. I kind of like that he called the defense soft. I know that was a big... I'm always like,
what
okay,
would you have done as a player if say Gary Kubiak comes in and goes, yeah, our defense is soft?
Well, you know what? Because a few weeks later, Udoka said it after a disappointing loss I can't remember who they lost to, but Udoka just flat out said, we were soft tonight. We got to be. And Fred VanVleet,
yeah,
when asked about the comments, was like, yep, that's right, we were. Ideally, you recognize that you're playing soft. I mean, because that's an insult. I don't think people realize
that.
That is
the insult of all insults right there.
The S word is a trigger, man. So you got to, I mean, it depends on what kind of coach you are. If you're a guy that says it all the time, it starts to lose its import.
Right.
But if it's a one-off or something, it hits you. If you respect the coach, you're like, oh, crap, I don't want to be that guy. So I don't know. As far as Vrabel going in, my cautionary tale for the Patriots organization, poor, you know, is down on their luck as they've been low these many years.
Yeah.
I think whenever you try too hard to recapture or emulate the past, you're treading in dangerous waters. You know, it's, and I guess, and it's really hard because I think that Mike Vrabel is a really good head coach. I think he's probably a better coach than he is a coordinator. But are they... If they hired him, is it more of an indication that they're just still trying to recreate or do something that you just can't replicate? Yeah. Because when I look at the two teams that I respect the most, probably in terms of the way they've operated, the types of players they have, the success that they've had over a long stretch of time, the Ravens and the Steelers are really, really good. And they've done, both of those teams have done it with a couple different head coaches. They've done it with different quarterbacks. With the Ravens, they did it without a quarterback at all, basically. The biggest common denominator there is that their personnel people have a culture.
Yep,
absolutely. Like that, and they draft really well. You know, in the case of the Ravens, they use their compensatory picks really well. And it's neither of those teams are heavy-duty free agency acquisition-type teams. It's a lot of homegrown talent. And they identify these just blue-collar football players, and they play the game that you want to play. Where I look at the Patriots, and I think if there was any weakness as an organization in their stretch, I mean, it's like, you know, obviously they didn't have many weaknesses, but I think they were much better on the actual football side of things than they were at actually identifying talent. And some of their drafting of wide receivers or what have you, they were really, really good for a while, and then the brain drain started to seep in, and it felt like once they lost Caserio, not that Caserio was the driving force, but like Caserio is kind of like the last remaining guy from the personnel side of things that had created the castle.
Yep.
So I don't know where they are on that side of everything. I don't know how much the coaching is going to matter if they haven't really address the scouting and the GM side of things. But I like Vrabel. Vrabel's the type of coach that I think the fans would love and everything. And it's just a matter of, okay, what can he do with a young quarterback?
Yeah, I think Vrabel in New England would be interesting. I think Vrabel with the New York Jets would be wild, depending on especially what happens with Aaron Rodgers. But that might be a defense that's more maybe ready-made for Vrabel. That's going to be interesting. I'm glad.
I don't think Vrabel. Can you imagine Vrabel and Aaron Rodgers?
Someone would die by the end of the year.
I don't know which one, but die. He wouldn't. I mean, he would. It would be a pretty quick fight between Vrabel and Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. You bring up the Ravens. There's always a point whenever I'm doing drafts where you look up the Ravens draft and they draft, you know, whomever, Tyler Linderbaum. You're like, yeah, of course, you know, of course. It's like the player they draft. You just look at it and go, of course. But it's also the moves the Ravens make. 2018, number 32 pick, Philadelphia Eagles have got that pick. They trade their first and fourth to Baltimore in exchange for Baltimore's second and fourth. And a second-round selection in 2019. That's a pretty small price to have paid for Lamar Jackson now looking back. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't that much. They just moved to the bottom of the first round, locked up Lamar, and now the guy could be a three-time MVP. Now, obviously, he's got to prove it in the AFC Championship game, but give him time. But they make those moves, too. You look up, and they've made the smartest move of anybody. You know, the Eagles have been in that mindset. You know, drafting Jalen Hurts just looked like nothing. It was a second-round pick, bringing a guy, maybe building his. And now you look at Jalen Hurts kind of driving that machine, although it doesn't look like he might be playing this weekend, so we'll see what's going on.
That thing popped up real quick yesterday. I saw it because people rehash this every now and then after Lamar has a game like he had versus the Texans. Somebody will say, I can't believe there wasn't a team in the league that tried to get Lamar Jackson. And it drives me crazy because there's a reason that no team tried to go after him. It's because they knew the Ravens were going to re-sign him. He was a restricted free agent, and teams just didn't want to bother with creating any kind of extra drama for what would be a failed mission. Like, if you went out and tried to get – so you're not going to, like – you're not going to tell your current quarterback, hey, we're going after Lamar, but you're cool if it doesn't work out, right? Because the Ravens were going to do what they did, which was give him a league-leading contract. It was never an actual free agency.
Okay, I'm going to ask Seth this because I think that Seth would understand because of the position he played, how thankless that job actually was. Had Seth played a different position prior to and then got moved down to nose tackle, would he have looked at it as a demotion, even if he would have gotten paid a lot of money? Something for you to think about, Seth. We'll talk about who that player is and what it means going forward next.